coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. Sorry about that. Choking up there, Eric the Tech. It's Monday. How are you?
I'm doing good. You crying?
You know, it sounded like it, didn't it? Well, I'll tell you what. Let me start this properly. Welcome to Hagman, where truth can't be silenced, and we're not going to be silenced. You know, I got choked up, and I'll tell you why. It's between a laugh. I want to laugh. I want to cry. I want to just, rend my garments.
It was just a short hey.
Hey. I do that to my grandson. Hey.
I thought you were dying on me.
Yeah. It would make good video, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. Now, you know what? Looking at the headlines, there's a landscape of headlines. Look at the landscape of different things that are going on. There's a lot going on, but obviously, you know, the continuation of this lunatic Marxist communist agenda, this lunacy, where Minneapolis has this push to disband their police department. So, imagine this. You dial 911 and phone number's out of service. It's beyond pathetic. And to see, look, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm tired of people sticking up for the FBI and the Department of Justice. I'm tired of saying that, you know, we've got to trust the plan. Trust the plan. Oh, trust me. There's a plan. Well, as Ted Brewer says, the plan sucks. Oh, my goodness. Here's something that I saw this weekend that I want to show to Sean Hannity, Dan Bongino. Dan, look, I know I like you guys, but when you see FBI agents taking a knee or kneeling for Black Lives Matter, I got to tell you something. Those aren't good optics. Did you see that picture? Eric the Tech, did you see the FBI agents or the FBI?
I didn't.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? I was going to save it. And I thought, even if I showed it, it just, to me, it repulses me. Meanwhile, what's not important, see that's getting top billing in the media. But what's not important over the last 96 hours, this from a listener who I haven't met, but I consider an ally. Over the last 96 hours, a Las Vegas Metropolitan Police officer was shot in the back of the head while struggling with a rioter. Active shooter opened fire on law enforcement in the Las Vegas courthouse. St. Louis police officers were shot by an active shooter. New York police officer was struck by a vehicle. And you saw this. Three Buffalo law enforcement officers were struck by a vehicle in front of the police station. Three Davenport law enforcement officers were ambushed. One was shot. 132 officers were injured in Chicago during a riot. Nine Pittsburgh officers were injured by objects during a riot. Several others in Rhode Island were injured during riots. And we had several here in my city injured, several police officers injured in violence. Two police officers, Santa Ana, struck in the head with projectiles. Two Richland officers were shot in Virginia. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Then you have violent Marxists following police to their homes where they start fires. Can you imagine being a police officer today? All right, this, and then you've got the police being told to stand down, instructed to stand down. They got to understand the police is a paramilitary type organization in its structure. You got to understand that, where you do have to listen to the orders. And of course, at the end of that, or top of the chain would be the mayor in the municipal setting. But that said, the left has virtually taken over all of the lower, the non-federal departments in many cases. I don't want to make too many blanket statements here. But when you see rank and file FBI agents, now on the other side of that, it looked like a staged kind of photo op. It looked hinky to me, that photograph. Nonetheless, I don't care if it's staged. If you've got 12, 18 FBI agents out of the rank and file who take a knee or take knees to a Black Lives Matter, to show their support, you got a problem. So I'm here to say this. I back law enforcement, but the law enforcement of pre-white privilege garbage. If you're asking what I mean by white privilege, very quickly. The Federalist has earlier today, published this article. CNN guest: not wanting to be raped and robbed is white privilege. Well, you can blow it out your ass. If she was on this program right now, that's exactly what I would tell her. Aside from the fact that, in my non-medical opinion, she's got some serious mental problems. There it is. Lisa Bender, Minneapolis City Council President Lisa Bender, said Americans ought to check their white privilege when they voice their concerns over the inevitable anarchy that comes from the removal of community law enforcement. Do you understand the word dismantle our police? Boy, some editing done here in this article. Sorry. Do you understand that? If I read it verbatim, it's not going to sound right. Do you understand the word dismantle our police free, meaning force, I believe, also makes some people nervous? For instance, what if in the middle of the night my home is broken into? Who do I call? CNN's Allison Camerota asked Bender today. Yes, I mean, I hear that loud and clear from a lot of my neighbors and myself too. And I know that comes from a place of privilege for those of us for whom the system is working. I think we need to step back and imagine what it would feel like to already live in that reality. Okay. And that Jacob Fry or whatever his name is. What a goofball that guy, that Muppet is. The Minneapolis mayor. Anyway. This is where we're at today. And I want to thank the people who attended the Patreon meeting last night. Thank you so very much. And folks, thank you for your support for this broadcast. I admitted last night, I said, you know, I don't even know if I want to do this anymore. I'm serious. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And I'm going to ask John Moore the same thing. You know, at this point, do we even want to do this anymore? Because frankly, I'm ready right now. I'm ready to make it real. Bring it. I might be old. I guarantee you, I'll give you a run for your money for the first, 30, 45 seconds. Maybe after that, I might have to do it from a recliner or a wheelchair. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's where to go for his, all of his radio broadcasts, his links to articles. That's the web presence for John Moore. There it is on your screen, thelibertyman.com. Listen to the John Moore Show live on RBN. There is a link there. Every day of the week, he's out there plugging away in the trenches, talking truth, talking about what we need to do. But I'm going to ask John. John, are you, I mean, you look at this and you just, have people lost their flipping minds? Help me understand this.
John. Thank you. First of all, people need to put thelibertyman.com directly in your browser. Do not use the search engine. Second of all, thank you for having me, as usual.
Hey, thanks. No. I want to thank you for being a part of this, but go ahead.
Well, Doug, there's, in our careers as professional investigators, we have different terms we use. A term that I've used, I don't know if I could take credit for it, but I refer to people like you're talking about as quote-unquote having a loose grip on reality. Those people have always been around. They always will be around. The issue is mainstream media giving them airtime. That's the issue. Of course these people are around. There's never been a shortage of people that have, quote-unquote, a loose grip on reality. The difference is giving these people airtime. That's what's different. Something I realized this morning in one of the groups I belong to, in the Special Forces Association, they forwarded a video. The 74-year-old gentleman who was pushed and stumbled backward and split his skull open was bleeding. Remember that? It was all over the internet, right?
That was not too far from me. And right. Okay. Yeah, and he's known to the cops. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it turns out not only was he a paid employee of Antifa, the video shows him holding something called a skimmer, and he was standing there as the police approached him, holding this electronic device in close proximity to the police officer's radios. This device will pick up and record the frequency, the radio the police are using, so that the enemy can make use of that knowledge. That's what he was doing. That's what the video shows. When he was he was pushed gently backwards, by the way. That officer did not use undue force, as if he wanted. The force used was not the harm, was not the kind of force that any adult male would use to cause harm to an individual. It was just a gentle shove, not something that was violent or was meant to cause any harm with intent. Obviously, the man lost his balance and fell backwards and busted his skull open. But the video I saw did not show me a healthy adult male attempting to cause harm. That was not the kind of push that was. Plus, the man was engaging in behavior that, if it wasn't criminal, it certainly was unethical to use an electronic device in an attempt to intercept and gain knowledge of what frequencies the police are making use of.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I saw that video. I had to watch it a couple of times, and I realized, without getting into the actual text of whatever article I landed on, I figured that's exactly what he was doing. And then once I received that verification, found out, of course, his ties to Antifa and the left. And then I understood, okay. And yeah, I watched that, that officer kind of push that man. And yeah, he fell, hit his head. But you know what? You play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Right, right. I recall my St. Louis TV show where I began in 1995, a woman called up complaining that a friend of mine at a pro-life demonstration had attempted to hurt her during this demonstration. And my friend is a former Marine, and so I asked her, I said, were you injured? And she said, no. I said, madam, if my friend, a former Marine, had wanted to harm you, you would have been in the hospital. I guarantee it. He's a former Marine. He's an able-bodied adult male with the full strength of an able-bodied adult male with the training of the United States Marine Corps to kill people with his bare hands. I assure you he was attempting no harm to you, or you would have been seriously injured or dead. End of story. And going back to the officer, I was a football player, and I've had a little bit of hand-to-hand combat training. And it's easy to tell that somebody is attempting to use physical force with the intent to cause harm. That officer was clearly, absolutely clearly, not attempting to cause any physical damage to this man. It was a gentle shove is all it was.
Exactly. And you know, I'm of the school, honestly, that, I mean, speaking only for me, if, there will not be any ambiguity. If I'm going to cause physical harm, or if that was my intent, or is my, you know, you won't have to wonder. All right. And that's, I'm not trying to be a hard, you know, hard guy or anything like that. I'm just saying I don't know. There's absolutely no shortage of mopes out there and Muppets that have room temperature IQs. And I'll tell you,
There never has been a shortage of people.
But that's nothing new.
What's different is giving them airtime. That's what's different. And having them occupy elected office, unfortunately. Now, going back to your earlier statements about defunding these police departments, while 911 was still being in effect, but only for the paramedics and the fire department, no longer for the police.
Oh, that's right. That's
a prescription for anarchy is all that is. And criminals fear two things. They fear armed citizens and the police. And if, quite frankly, they fear armed citizens more than the police because they know properly trained police that are acting within the guidelines of what they're allowed to do are not going to cause them harm if they exhibit no resistance and present no physical threat to the police officers. They know that. Or the armed citizen, on the other hand, they don't know what the armed citizen's going to do. They really don't, especially women. One bank robber, he was interviewed. He would only go to a bank where there would be a female teller. And a reporter asked, well, why do you only go to banks to rob banks with female tellers? And he said, because I know what the women will do, what the men will do. Male tellers. He only went to banks with male tellers. I got that backwards. And I asked him why. And he said, I know what the male tellers will do when I hand the note. I don't have a clue what the women are going to do.
For those out there saying, huh? What does that mean?
Well, women are unpredictable. That's what that means. And women are unpredictable by, it's just their nature. Women are unpredictable. And God bless them because, you know, they compliment the men. But getting back to the anarchy, it would take minutes for the criminals to determine that the police will not respond to a bank robbery, to a pharmaceutical store being pharmacy being held up, a liquor store, whatever it might be, and it'll be anarchy and it would be mayhem very quickly. A jewelry store is the same way. Anything where there's things of with a lot of value that can be sold without question, jewelry, firearms, liquor, and so forth, it would be a free-for-all very quickly. I don't know if these proposals are just grandstanding for political purposes or if these men and women and these city councils and these mayors actually mean what they say. It might just be temporary political grandstanding to gain favor with their political base. I hope that's all it is. I hope that they're sensible enough not to want to actually implement these defunding programs.
I'd like to think that's the case. I'm looking at the documentation behind the research behind the articles that are talking about this, and I'm not seeing any kind of coming to senses or, you know, saying that, no, we're not going to do this. I'm seeing this really big push. Now, you know, you've got, and maybe, just maybe, it would be good to, go ahead and defund the police. So, in other words, not have the police. You don't want the police? Okay, you don't get the police. And I wonder, for example, that city council president, I wonder how long she would last when she becomes a, bodily fluid receptacle for the Somalia immigrants, aliens, you know, who have designs on her period, you know, on her comma period. End of sentence. Had to be a little bit specific there, but you know, okay. So look, I don't want to dominate. I want to ask you just basically, you know, here we are another week, has gone by 168 hours since we last, started this. You and I, a lot of things have changed. A lot of things have gotten worse. A lot of things have kind of tempered out and petered out in some cases. What do you want to focus on?
There's the coronavirus has not gone away, the Chinese flu.
Right.
It's been about 5 or 6 days ago. We found out the following. Back in March, I believe it was, the German government, the Department of the Ministry of the Interior, appointed a panel of very well-respected, high-ranking scientists and doctors to look into the coronavirus, COVID-19, Chinese flu. Well, they did, and they wrote a 93-page report. The government didn't like the findings of their panel that they appointed, so they suppressed that report. However, a member of the Interior Ministry, an employee, leaked the report. It's 93 pages. We had an English summary pretty quick. We now have an English translation, which is put out. One of my listeners in the Philippines got that done. It's a Google translation, which is not very well done, quite frankly, and as I knew it would not be, but we wanted to get it up as quick as possible. What the panel of scientists and doctors appointed by the German government revealed is that it's a fraud. It's a scam. That the people dying were all the people who died were within a year of dying from something anyway, because they were near the end of their lives and their lifespan was nearly over, and they did get the Chinese flu and they died. So basically, Doug, this is one of the things I've been looking for, which is evidence from professionals with the highest standards of education and experience within the scientific and medical community reporting on this as they were asked to do so by the German government, who didn't like the report from their own panel. So, Doug, we've spent the last 3 months destroying the economy of the West, especially the United States, putting us at risk economically, causing business failures, causing all kinds of needless harm, needless death, because there have been fatalities due to the lockdown, quite frankly. And we continue. It continues this day. The consequences of this hoax that the entire Western civilization has been exposed to, and much of the world, quite frankly, not just the West. So that's on my website at thelibertyman.com. We've got the clumsy, not so well done Google translation. We're working with a couple of translators to get it's a lot of work to translate 93 pages of scientific material, to say the least. But we're working to get a good quality translation from a human being as opposed to a computer. But I'm glad we got what we got. Despite the clumsiness of the Google translation, you can make enough sense of it to understand that what's been going on the last 3 months is a scam and a hoax, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's, you know... But when you say it's a hoax, are we not looking at maybe some variations of this coronavirus? You know,
Well, initially that was one of the first things I mentioned when we first had the first reports of coronavirus in the United States, those first 4 weeks, let's say. Now, I was on my first Caribbean cruise watching what was going on in China, in Wuhan. And what I saw then was, a man would be walking down the street, ambulatory, and just fall down face first and die and bleed out right there on the sidewalk. And I thought to myself, whoa, this is something really, really dangerous. So within the 4 weeks of the announcement that Wuhan coronavirus was here in the United States, I started asking, how come Americans aren't walking down the street, falling down face first, and bleeding out from the coronavirus? How come that's not happening here? And people were saying, well, it's a different strain. Well, how about the strain didn't exist at all?
Okay.
That's a more logical answer.
So what was the precipitating event behind what we saw, you know, somebody falling down and bleeding out, or just falling down and dying, you know, without necessarily bleeding?
Well, first of all, it's China, and we don't know that we can trust. And I haven't analyzed this as carefully as I could have. But I don't trust very much coming out of China at all, quite frankly.
I don't either.
Did it really happen? These streets were deserted. Wuhan was on lockdown. So the man just happens to be walking down the street, and someone just happens to be videotaping a man walking alone. No particular reason to be videotaping a guy, just a guy walking down the street. And then he just happens to fall face first and bleed out and die. There's too many coincidences there.
You know, I agree. And you're not talking about a surveillance camera catching someone. You're talking about someone actively videotaping someone.
Physically holding a camera, precisely.
Right. And honestly, you know, anymore, how can you authenticate
here's the point.
Video?
Well, here's the point, Doug. Millions of people saw the same video that you and I are talking about.
Right.
And those images are part of our subconscious and will be to the day we die.
True.
Those images plant fear in people's brains. I know when I first saw those, I quickly ordered things I thought I might need for myself and my daughter's family, because if it was that bad, I knew we would need serious protective equipment, as they call it, very quickly. So I made sure I already had the N95 mask. I picked up a couple of extra items. I already had just about everything I had and I needed, and shipped it to my daughter in case what I saw from those Chinese videos was real and not staged. It turned out, in my opinion, it probably was staged. How could they only contain the less deadly form of the virus in China? You know, before the president shut down flights from China, many thousands of Chinese made it to the United States, many thousands. And many of them brought the coronavirus with them. Did we luck out and not bring the deadly form? I don't think so. I don't think the deadly form even existed. I also started telling people in probably early March that the vaccine has been in refrigerators for 6 months waiting to be used. And I stick by that. I think they already got their vaccine. And anybody who takes this vaccine, if they've are aware of what I know, and I believe what you know, Doug, they're probably a complete idiot to accept this vaccine, or any vaccine, as far as that goes.
I agree.
And I'm proud to say, given what my knowledge, that I am anti-vaccine, any vaccine for any reason, given what I now know about vaccines. So, Doug, we as a collective group, we in the United States, we've destroyed the best economy our country's ever had, the best economy the world's ever seen. That's where we were in February. The best economy in the history of our country, the best economy in the history of the planet. Gone down to what might be called a Depression-era unemployment, although it's bouncing back quickly. And the goal of this president is to have the economy bounce back quickly. He's got an election coming up, and now he's dealing with the coronavirus on one hand and the Antifa activists on the other.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, to me, I don't believe in coincidences. I mean, sometimes things happen. I understand that, but I don't believe in, I look at, the timing of this Communist Chinese Party virus, but not the virus, the response. And there's a big difference there. So I look at the response, the type of response, and the coordinated response by the blue states, primarily, by the governors and the usual suspects. We all know who they are, from de Blasio to, you know, the governors Whitmer and so on. So you see this virus in air quotes. You see the response, and then as things start waning, I mean, and the response, of course, is to eradicate the gains made by President Trump and to destroy the economy. And I think a lot of people are missing this as well. What I see specifically being destroyed with the response to this virus is the healthcare system in America. Because look at how many medical professionals have been laid off. Look at how many, just look at the results of this.
Doug,
go ahead.
Doug.
Go ahead.
Doug,
yeah.
Doug.
Yeah. What? John, what? John, what? come on. You want to wrestle?
CIA does some things pretty well. One of them is gather statistics from around the planet. And the CIA's website clearly says that there's about 37 countries that have a longer lifespan than we do. Now, you're talking about destroying a health. I don't care. I don't call what we have in this country health care at all. If it was, you know, it's easily documented that the United States spends more money per capita on what they call health care than any country in the world. Nobody else comes even close to what's spent per capita on what we call health care. I don't call it health care. If it was, we would at least be in the top 10 of longevity, not 35 or 37 from the top. So maybe it needs to be destroyed. You know, we can duplicate what's, you know, I don't like communism and I don't like Cuba, but the people live there longer than we do. And it's a third world country with mostly dirt roads and probably half the population has no telephones and no electricity. I don't know what's going on down there, but there's no doubt it's a third world country. So how come third world countries have a longer lifespan than we do? That's the question, Doug.
All right.
We spent how many years the public discourse on how to spend money on health care, how to have health care for everybody? There was a more foundational question. That question is, what is health care? Not how to spend money on what we already got. What we've already got doesn't work. If it did work, we would have like I said a moment ago, we'd be at least in the top 10 of longevity.
Where are you getting the numbers from?
35 or 37.
So where are those numbers from?
CIA. Yes, sir.
All right. Okay. All right. So because I question any numbers given to me anymore. I really do. Okay.
Well, any search engine, you just put USA or put world lifespan or international longevity. You can get these. There's other reliable sources.
All right.
Those numbers.
Okay. Let me pull back a second here. If you go back pre-Hillary Clinton, pre-Hillary care, before she began meddling in that whole, back in 92-ish, began, the co-president of the United States and started meddling in healthcare. And as we've seen this, if you go back pre-92, I'll just leave it at that. I think we had a different healthcare system than we do today. If you're saying, well, maybe it needs to be revamped and destroyed, I agree, but certainly not with healthcare for all or unlimited healthcare. I'm not sure. Are you saying that we need this universal healthcare in this country, this socialized medicine?
Far from.
Okay.
Far from it.
All right.
Far
I want to make sure. It. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, far from it. What we need is we went through this in the period 1911, 1912. It was a combination of money from different sources that changed the teaching hospitals in this country. The teaching hospitals in this country, they taught homeopathic medicine. That was traditional medicine for many decades. And they went to allopathic teaching hospitals. Rockefeller needed a way to sell his oil, and pharmaceutical products were made from oil. So that's what took place more than a century ago. We need to go back to what works. We had a very healthy population, 1912 and earlier. Once you got past 5 years old, you're going to live a long, healthy life. That's the way it was. The teaching hospitals before 1912, if there was a cancer patient, they made sure all the students got to inspect and review the cancer patient because they were told the following. let's take, for example, lung cancer. This is so rare, you may spend your 40-year career and never see a patient with lung cancer. That's how rare it was.
Okay.
Back before 1912.
And that's interesting, because I haven't heard this before.
Well, that's reality. So many things have changed in our culture and our society. I'm reading a book now about the reality of unpasteurized milk and how healthy it is. My daughter, my first wife, the mother of my child, was a registered nurse, and she said, "What we're going to do, honey, is we're going to make our own formula." I got raw milk from a dairy farmer, and we made our own formula using raw, unpasteurized milk, brewer's yeast, and some other items we put in there and blended it together. And we had a very healthy daughter who's now in her mid-40s with her own family, of course. What's been done to milk, just as one example, is it's not criminal, but it probably should be criminal. What passes for healthy milk now is anything but healthy in terms of removing most of the nutritional value, and it's just not healthy. So the way to look at many investigations, Doug, is to pick out countries where people are really, really healthy and duplicate what they do. I think that would be a fair statement. If you want to have a healthy population, you look around the planet and you say, well, who's got a healthy population? What do they eat? What do they have for health care? And then duplicate what they do, as opposed to what we've been doing, which doesn't work.
Okay, when you say duplicate what they do, I'm in agreement with that. By picking and choosing, you know, obviously, you can there are many variables there, obviously. So I would say...
Well, there are.
Okay.
There are, obviously. But it's a good starting point. You can apply that principle to almost anything. You want to be a master violinist? Well, you duplicate what an existing master violinist does in terms of training, expertise, equipment, and so forth. And I think you can apply that principle to many of the things we do in life. If I want to be an expert automobile mechanic, I duplicate the training, experience, and tools of an expert automobile mechanic.
Sure.
That's what I would do.
Makes sense.
Same thing. Yeah. And our healthcare system is broken. It's absolutely broken. When I bought my motorcycle, when was that? About 11 years ago now. I told my wife, I said, "Honey, I'll do the adult thing. I'll get a lot of life insurance and make sure I got plenty of insurance in case I dump the thing and get hurt." So I had not had life insurance for 40 years, so I made the application, and they sent some nurse out to take my vital statistics, you know, blood sample and all that. That wasn't good enough. It was on the form I filled out, they asked me when my last pharmaceutical prescription was, and I said 1985, and they asked for the name of my doctor. I gave them the last one I had, which was 1985, so they approached him for records. He says, "Well, I destroy records after 10 years if the guy doesn't come back." So there were no records. I can hold up a blank sheet. Here's my medical record for the last, since 1985, Doug. I'll hold it up here for the camera.
There it is, here's right?
This is my medical record since 1985. All of it. Right here.
That's
my medical record since 1985. So they sent me to a second clinic to do a more refined workup. That wasn't good enough. Finally, I had to spend half a day with a medical doctor in his clinic because it can't be possible that a man in his early 60s, that's what I was at the time, has not consumed a pharmaceutical product since 1985. The guy has to be lying. That was their conclusion. This man has to be lying. So...
Yeah.
normal, what's now normal used to be abnormal.
Right, right. I agree.
When I was in high school, men in their 60s and 70s routinely had not had a pharmaceutical product their entire adult lives. That was routine 50 years ago. That's the way it was. That was normal 50 years ago. The new normal is a man, and if Americans over age 50 typically have at least one pharmaceutical prescription they take every day. Once they're 60, typically 4 to 5, and once they're 70, 6, 7, or 8, or 9, or 10 that they take on a daily basis. That's become normal.
That I agree. I don't think you're going to find any man over the age of 50, or very few, I would say, who is has not been prescribed some sort of cholesterol-lowering drug.
I eat all the cholesterol I can. Here's my breakfast this morning. Three eggs that were still in the chicken 4 days ago. A 4-ounce steak grilled about 60 seconds on each side in coconut oil, mostly with a lot of fat, by the way. A slice or two of gluten-free bread with homemade butter that has, has never been pasteurized, and a big glass of raw milk. I eat all the cholesterol I can get my hands on. Your brain, and here's something that we're looking into, myself and a couple of associates. It appears that everybody we've talked to who is a caregiver for somebody with Alzheimer's has revealed to us that without exception, everybody who has Alzheimer's has also had a prescription for cholesterol-reducing pharmaceutical products. Your brain cannot function.
That too.
Yep. Doug, your brain cannot function without cholesterol.
Yep.
It can't, and it won't.
Yep. I agree. Last time I had my blood taken, the doctor says, your cholesterol is a little high. It wasn't that high. And he said, we're going to put you on a statin drug. I said, no. First of all,
see, the doctors mean well, but they're training. Once I graduate from medical school, their training and updates on what's going on comes from detail people, not from reading articles, not from going to conferences. Most of these MDs, most of the time, they get updates on how to help people. And that's the term given to people who represent the pharmaceutical companies that go to the doctor's offices. They're called detail people. And beginning about 20 years ago, they hired only former cheerleaders. Only former cheerleaders. The doctors mean well. It's not that the doctors are unethical. It's all they know, Doug. They don't know anything else.
It took me back, John, when you were saying that, it took me back to 10, 12 years ago. I had a different family doctor, and I had to go see him for some reason. I don't even remember why. And there were like three pharmaceutical representatives waiting to see him. Very small office. He was just a single guy, single family practitioner, and with their briefcases and samples and stuff. And honest to goodness, I looked at him. I'm thinking, first of all three are women. Second of all three are wearing some pretty provocative. They're dressed. And thirdly, I thought maybe they walked out of Hooters. I don't know. But you're right. That was my observation. I'm just saying. Just what I saw. I'm not sure of what happened, what do they do? Do they sell the stuff to the doctors
They present themselves as bringing educational material
to
the doctors. Since I'm reading this book on the milk and the milk industry, I'm learning a lot. There'll be well-written scientific papers about a certain aspect of milk, for example. It could be cholesterol. And within the body of the report, the scientific report, they give the real deal of what's really going on. And then at the end, there's a summary that frequently is in direct contradiction to the body of the report itself. Which is supports something the pharmaceutical industry wants to distribute, of course, in terms of a pharmaceutical product. So these detail people, they can point to the summary of a valid scientific report where the summary itself is defective in order to get the doctor to want to prescribe a certain pharmaceutical product. The whole paradigm is broken. It's entirely broken. If a person eats the right food, does not eat the wrong food, gets a reasonable amount of exercise, drinks good, clean, pure water with no sodium fluoride in it, no chlorine in it, and has a great attitude, which is goes to your spiritual well-being, of course, you're going to be a healthy person. You will be. That's not what's addressed. The manipulation of our food supply, the manipulation of the medical industry, and it is an industry, by the way, is leading to people not having the fun, full, productive lives that they can and should have, and living lives with chronic issues involving pain and illness that simply don't need to exist. And I was in the Czech Republic. Yeah, well, Doug, the summer of 2017, I went to Prague, Czech Republic, to be awarded the Prague Peace Prize. And I was on the street there in downtown Prague, observing the local residents. I saw, except for tourists, I saw almost no obesity among the Czech citizens. Almost none.
And how long ago was that? How many years?
The summer, 3 years ago.
Three years ago.
2017.
All right. Okay.
They look happy. They look healthy. They look productive. They were height, weight proportionate, and they walked with confidence and a good stride. You can tell a lot by people just watching them walk across the room about their overall health. That's what I saw, was a healthy, height, weight proportionate population when I was in the Czech Republic, in direct contradiction to observing people in the United States who are mostly not height, weight proportionate, don't walk as if they're healthy with that confident, long stride that healthy people have. So, Doug, just to summarize real quickly before we move on to something else, our healthcare system is broken, needs to be repaired. I doubt it's going to happen anytime soon. What I'd like to see is people take responsibility for their own health and their own nutrition, study up on nutrition themselves, figure out what food is best for them, and then get their hands on that food. A healthy, organic food, raw milk, water that is clean, pure water with no sodium fluoride in it. Most Americans, most of the time, Doug, you've been around paramedics. One of the first things the paramedics do when they respond to somebody that needs medical assistance, they do the pinch test. You know what the pinch test is?
Yeah, the skin, see how fast it goes back.
They pinch the back of the hand up into a little tent, and I can do that here for the camera. I'll hold up my hand and pinch. And the little tent immediately goes away, then you're properly hydrated. If the little tent you pinch up does not immediately go flat again, then you're dehydrated. And that's a standard test. Unless you're suffering from a heart attack, obviously they're doing CPR. But if you're not in that kind of distress, that's one of the first things the paramedics do. And most Americans, most of the time, are, guess what? They're dehydrated. They simply don't consume. Now, how simple is that?
Well, yeah.
There was a medical doctor incarcerated in Iran. He got on the wrong side of the mullahs over there. And so he's in his prison. And since he's a medical doctor, he's trying to help the other prisoners. And he discovered that the majority of things that these prisoners were suffering from were a matter of dehydration. He wrote a book about it that my doctor recommended for me, and I'd already had it before he recommended it. And the title of the book is, You're Not Sick, You're Thirsty. But many, and I say many with an underline, many people suffering from various illnesses are basically, they're dehydrated, and nothing more than that. Medical doctors don't know this, the majority of them. So if they don't know it, they can't figure out that that's an underlying problem that's causing other problems, simple dehydration.
Well, and I have to agree with you on this, because I do notice that this is one of the biggest and most simplest things for me. Any issues I've had or the issues I've had, it's always been mitigated. They've been mitigated by the consumption of water. And, you know, Ted Brewer and I speak about this all the time, and I'm sure you've talked to him about this too. You got to drink a certain amount of water in order to, and the kind of water without the fluoride and without the gunk in it, you know. So this is something we all can do folks. This is something we just a reminder, this is something we all can do. I mean, to kind of give you a left turn onto the healthcare industry, I understand, you know, what you're saying. And by the way, I think the bureaucrats should stay the hell out of the healthcare industry. Let the doctors do the doctoring, as opposed to, you know, the,
well, they're not allowed to, Doug. They're not allowed to. A nurse practitioner basically has the training of a medical doctor for all intents and purposes. Right. They can prescribe meds and so forth. So I'm friends with a medical practitioner and a nurse practitioner. Anyway, we're talking about these alternatives that we know work and have a track record of working. She says, John, I'm not allowed to do those things. If I tell a patient to do what you're suggesting, even though I know it works, even though I know it's the right thing to do, I'll be fired from my job. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
And of course, she wasn't in private practice. She was working for a massive Metro St. Louis hospital. She was in private practice. Of course, I'm not sure a nurse practitioner can be a solo practitioner. They have to be affiliated with a medical doctor. But regardless, she knew it was the right thing to do, what would work, what was healthy, could possibly not cause any harm at all, but she wasn't allowed to do it.
You know, it just reminds me, just real briefly, look, I am anti-illegal, you know, drugs like anyone else would be, any other normal, sensible human being, and I believe that, you know, we should have death penalties for pushers, and in some cases we do have laws, that state laws that address this. But here's one thing I saw, and I'm just going to kind of just summarize this very briefly. We had a friend who since passed away. She passed away here earlier this year. She was in constant pain. I mean, she was just a mess, and she was bedridden, and it hurt for her to breathe. The pain that I witnessed this woman go through, and my wife witnessed this. Anyway, to make a long story short, the palliative care was dictated not by her physician, but by some non-doctor, non-medical oversight committee. And she was dying, okay? And she was prescribed a patch of fentanyl, a fentanyl patch, and to relieve her pain. And other drugs that are regulated. The bottom line with this is they were worried about her becoming addicted in the final months of her life. They were worried about her becoming addicted. And there's a difference. Not, I don't want people to confuse, you know, somebody who builds up a resistance to these drugs, but addicted. In terms of having to become unaddicted, you know, sobering out. So I have this utter disdain for the people who make these laws to the extent that, you know, if they ever are in a situation like that, I have no problem in taking a fishing line, tying a little tablet of morphine or whatever relief that they could get, and just dangling it in front of their nose as they're in pain. That's my contempt for these people. So, again, throw this in the column of what's wrong with our medical system. It's become overtaken by these bureaucratic politicians who override doctors in many cases. And then, of course, yeah, the pharmacists who believe that they're all that because they're standing on this little platform in a white coat saying, well, you know that this is – because we were authorized to pick up the prescriptions delivered to the woman. Anyway, it was horrible. It was something I just witnessed was horrible. So – I don't know where I was going with that except to say, you know what? I'm just sick and tired of this whole flipping mess. I just am. And you know what? Let's go back to non-pasteurized milk. Let's go back to the, I'll have what you're having for breakfast. I'm going to come over. Let's have breakfast together. And
that sounds good, Doug.
To hell with the, pasteurizing crap and this other stuff that they do. And if I want to eat a piece of fat, I'm going to eat a piece of fat.
Well, something that's fairly well known within certain circles. If you feed a baby cow pasteurized, homogenized milk, it will die. It will die from lack of nutrition.
Okay. One other thing.
You take the milk from that baby cow's mother.
Yeah.
You homogenize it and pasteurize it and feed it back to the baby cow. it will die for lack of nutrition.
Okay. Speaking about milk, and I'm going to end this because I asked Ted this, and I know that, you know, we're all friends with Ted and stuff, but, are the human mammals, are we not the only one that drink the milk of other mammals? In other words, you don't see a cow going over there to the teat of a pig, do we? Or a goat?
No, we don't. But human beings have been doing this for centuries.
All right.
It was one of the things that allowed civilization to move forward by having access to this perfect food. And northern Europeans and Europeans in general have a better tolerance for drinking liquid milk as opposed to milk that's been made into cheese and so forth. So the track record is many centuries old of human beings literally thriving on raw, unpasteurized milk, literally thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, no other mammal consumes the milk of another mammal, at least naturally. Obviously, you can feed cats milk and they'll drink that milk. But it's not natural. It's not normal for that to do that. That's something human beings do probably exclusively. And is there anything wrong with that? Not that I'm aware of. The track record speaks for itself of the health benefits of consuming raw, unpasteurized milk.
Right.
It comes from cows that walk around in a field of green grass, eating their natural food, which is green grass. That's their natural food that produces the best quality milk.
And my closing question on this, if I can ask this, for those who never tasted non-pasteurized or raw milk, is there any taste difference, or is it taste worse or better? You know, obviously that's subjective.
Well, first of all, it's the way milk is supposed to taste, as opposed to anything else you may have tasted before. It's an excellent flavor. There's nothing that any normal person would find offensive in raw and pasteurized milk. It's just a great milk taste that milk should have. Doug, I've went most of the last 30, 35 years with consuming no milk products at all until I was reminded by reading this book about what I was missing. I'm always looking for ways to improve my nutrition, improve my health. And a friend of mine recommended this book, and after the first few pages, I was pretty much sold on relearning what I had known when my daughter was an infant 45 years ago. The benefits, and they are extreme, the extreme health benefits of drinking raw, unpasteurized milk from a healthy cow that is grazing on green grass, the way nature intended. It's just simply something I've thrown in to make my overall health and nutrition better. And I encourage people to do their own research and come to their own conclusions.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you spending that time. It's, you know, you might think, well, talking about the healthcare system, talking about what we spoke about, it seems almost like not important. But when you look at the bigger picture, I think it is. And the way you laid it out, perfect. Even when I thought I was going to have to come to blows with you, but I was kidding, of course. But to really understand what's going on, folks, I think we need to do that. John, you laid it out perfectly. We're up against the top of the hour network break. You've got 2 minutes. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. My very special Monday guest is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Put that in the browser, says John, and I agree with that. Thelibertyman.com, the address bar, that is, thelibertyman.com. And, of course, the link is right in the program description box at HagmannReportLive.com, where you should be accessing this show anyway. With that, going to be right back with John Moore, the man, the myth, the legend, John Moore. Going to be right back.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report for today. It is the 8th day of June. It's Monday. It feels like a Monday in many different respects. I want to welcome you to the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. HagmanReportLive.com, HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you go for the video, audio assets and everything. And you hear John every Monday right here on the Hagman Report. We talk over issues of the week. We get some things done. He's a great investigator, I'll tell you that. And his resume is really second to none. TheLibertyMan.com is his website. And of course, you go there and you can get the radio show that he does and listen. I would urge everyone to listen to his radio show, TheLibertyMan.com. Now, having said that, by the way, I want to thank you, the Patreon members, the PayPal people that support us, the people who support us by mail. I went through some mail this weekend, and I'll tell you what, we so many people, so many great people. Thank you, because we are doing things both in front of the camera and behind the camera, and stuff behind the camera sometimes. The stuff that we do behind the camera is to advance the conservative constitutional agenda in ways that you'll never hear about, because we can't speak about it, because to do so would be to cause problems for our operational security. You know, the Democrats took a knee in Congress in the supposed tribute to George Floyd. I find it interesting to see, that mope, Nancy Pelosi with Schumer and some of the Democratic sycophants taking a knee. I don't take a knee to anyone except for Jesus Christ and God himself, okay? I will not live on my knees. I will not spend 1 minute on my knees. There they spent 8 minutes and 46 seconds, if you're watching this on whatever video platform you are, Hagman Report Live. Look at that. Shame on you. Shame on you. You subjugate yourself to this Marxist, communist, and Islamic agenda. And how dare you, to echo the words of Greta Thunberg. The shades of, I gotta tell you, shades of, Don Imus went through my head. Nappy headed. Never mind. Okay. I didn't say it. Eric, the text got, he's in the button. I didn't say it. All right. But thank you. Thank you so much for your support. By the way, I'm going to ask you this question, because I know I have been, and I've done something about what I'm about ready to tell you. Are you tired, for example, of credit card bills with high interest rates? Are you ready to pay off your credit card balances and start saving money? I've got a solution for you. Remember this. Commit this to memory. In fact, go there today, right now, right now. That is lightstream.com/Hagman, lightstream.com/Hagman. You know, it's, you can get a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream, and you could save thousands in interest. You get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. It's lower than the average credit card rate interest rate of over 19% APRs. Some of the cards in my wallet and my wife had and Eric had, because, you know, we buy stuff for the studio and such. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. You know, I felt like I was being held hostage when we switched to lightstream.com/Hagman. We got the benefit of a lower rate and saved a lot of money, much like some of the testimonials I've been receiving and reading. One says, I heard about Lightstream on a podcast. It was yours. That's right. And was able to look on their website and get clear information. The application process was quick and easy. Well, here's what you need to do, folks, to make it come true for you. Apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. Let me spell it out for you. It's LIGHTSTREAM. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. Two N's on Hagman. It's subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. And I want to thank you, because you know what? You deserve you'll thank me later, and you deserve that break. Many people saving money. All right. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. By the way, I got to send you some coffee for your guests who come into your sprawling expanse of an estate over there in the Ozarks. Go to HagmanStore.com, folks. HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com for Detective's Choice, Patriot, and Revolution blend. Three different blends, three different kinds of coffee. Bean, that's whole bean, ground, or K-cup. That's HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com. The roaster is at the ready to get it in your hands within 96 hours of roasting. So there it is. All right, John, I'm going to kick it over to you. I'm going to go take a break. I don't know. Eric and I are going to go for a walk.
Well, if you need to go for a walk, that's fine.
No. I'm going to defer to you at this point, this hour.
Okay. Well, a lot of people, Doug, are concerned about civil disorder, as well they should be. Antifa is making threats to show up in small towns around America, which for the most part have not been fulfilled. It doesn't change the fear people are feeling. I had a neighbor call me up, and this is a neighbor who lives less than a mile from me, and her husband was out of town, and she was fearful that Antifa was going to show up, and I assured her that was not going to happen in our remote area. It doesn't change the fact that the fear was there. So people need to be aware of the reality of these concerns as opposed to the make-believe being put up by Antifa, spreading fear needlessly. And if they do live in an area that could be affected by Antifa anarchists, they need to be prepared ahead of time. This woman was expressed her concern that she owned a firearm but didn't know how to use it properly. And I'm sure there's many people like that. There's been 2 million new gun owners in very recently in the United States, most of those 2 million probably don't have hardly any expertise using firearms properly and safely. First step, if you want to learn how to properly use a firearm, is there's two parts to that. One is to get proper training from a certified instructor, not a well-meaning relative who may or may not know what they're doing. As you know, Doug, I teach concealed carry training in the state of Missouri. Most people think that when they take concealed carry training, they're going to learn how to shoot a gun, which is true up to a point. It's minimal, very minimal, marginal training for safety and accuracy. The main focus of most instructors is proper use of deadly force, which it's not optional. You have to know when you may and when you may not use deadly force. Failure to learn that could have, obviously, very serious consequences that will affect you the rest of your life, possibly in very adverse ways, with outrageous legal expenses and possibly incarceration. So I would encourage people, if they want to arm themselves to protect life, they need to take a concealed carry class in their state, a real class, not some video presentation or something that takes an hour or two. The class I teach takes a full 8 hours, and about half of that is taken up with teaching people the proper use of deadly force. So that would be a good idea to take a real concealed carry course from a real instructor who will go over those kinds of details so there could be no doubt in your mind when you may and when you may not use deadly force. Then seek the advice of a qualified firearms instructor about choice of firearm. What I've seen many times, Doug, is a well-meaning husband, boyfriend, brother, a father will make a recommendation to a woman who's the size of a healthy 12-year-old boy, a firearm, a pistol, is completely inappropriate for that woman who is 5'2" and weighs 110 pounds. Completely inappropriate.
You know, let me tap your expertise here. Okay. Last night, and this is a question that when we had our Patreon meeting, a woman asked, and she's small framed. She's got a rotator cuff injury. Handling weapons, handguns, certain handguns are very difficult for her. I know my wife, okay, because of her arthritis. You know, she really's got to have a very limited trigger pull. You know, the trigger pull's got to be under certain pounds, okay, for her to be effective. Although I wouldn't want to stand in front of her with a gun when she's got an attitude because, you know, it's – anyway. So I'm seeing more and more of these people saying, okay, what kind of weapon should I get? And I'm seeing this, so you can address this.
Okay. Well, Americans like handguns, and it applies to both women and men. That's just simply a statement of fact, and that's the way it is. It's not necessarily the best thing to defend your home with, but if you're out in public and you want a concealed firearm, obviously a pistol is going to be the choice. For a woman, and this applies to almost all women all the time, and many men who don't have proper training and aren't going to take the time to get proper training, I recommend a revolver. For a woman, either a 32 revolver or a 357 shooting 38s. Why a 357 Magnum? Because the weight. If you have a heavy pistol with a light shooting cartridge in it, such as a 38 wide cutter, for example, it reduces the recoil dramatically. A 32 caliber revolver is many things in firearms are compromises, Doug. And of course, a 32 is a compromise also. It's marginal in terms of stopping power, but once again, you have dramatically reduced recoil. I generally do not recommend semi-automatic pistols for most women most of the time. And men who don't have the training and aren't going to seek the training to properly handle a semi-automatic pistol. In terms of long arms, the woman with rotator cuff, I might suggest a Mossberg 410 pump-action shotgun. The 410 is very powerful on one hand, on the other, because of the weight of the shotgun, the felt recoil is minimal. And they're accurate, they're powerful, they have a good cartridge capacity, they have a built-in flashlight, and many firearms these days have ways to attach a flashlight to them in case that's something you want to do. So revolvers for most women most of the time in a caliber and a weight that they can handle. Men, if they're willing to take the time to properly learn that pistol, and the example I make, I'll take a pistol, say for example a Browning High Power, and I'll completely field strip it behind my back, removing the parts and laying them on the table in front of me one at a time. And I say, ladies and gentlemen, if you're good enough to do this, then you're good enough to defend your life with this pistol, because there's no doubt in your mind where all the controls are and how they function properly. You need to be able to manipulate all the controls on a semi-automatic pistol, of which there are several, in complete darkness. If you can't, then you got no business trying to defend your life with it. Then I'll hold up a revolver that's obviously unloaded, and I'll point at the ceiling and pull the trigger a few times. And I'll say, you see how simple this is? There's no magazine to be separate from the pistol. You don't need to worry if a round is in a chamber or not in a chamber. You don't need to worry if the safety's on or off, because there is no safety. Simple, simple, simple. Then I hold up the other pistol, and I'll point to it and say, complex, complex, complex. So because of Hollywood TV shows and movies, semi-automatic pistols have become incredibly popular the last 40, 45 years, Doug. Even most police departments were influenced by Hollywood and movie and TV shows, and they started to transition from revolvers, which they'd carried for more than a century, to semi-automatic pistols in the early to mid-70s. Not necessarily the best choice. And then we got Glock salesmen. I'm not a big fan of Glock, by the way. Glock salesmen going to boards of police commissioners and chiefs of police saying, gentlemen, these pistols are so safe that you can cut down on training time and save money. And that's what they do. They cut back on the training time. And are they saving money? Probably. But they're putting officers on the street. They're, of course, police pistol training to begin with was pretty marginal before they cut back. So they cut back on the pistol training even more, making these officers less confident they would have been otherwise. So getting back to the original question, Doug, I suggest that women and men both get training from a certified firearms instructor, NRA certified firearms instructor, so they can get it right the first time. Many of my male students have bad habits they've had for decades. The women students, they come in frequently with no bad habits, and they're easier to teach because they don't have to unlearn bad habits first, which is difficult to do. My Monday guest, Sam Andrews, he says, you've heard the terms, Doug, practice makes perfect. Well, he turns it around and says the following: practice makes permanent. And
yeah, that's true.
I've had any number of male students, and I'll hold up my hand. You know, this is the trigger finger here, and these guys, they use two fingers on trigger because when they were 6 years old, they didn't have enough finger strength, and their grandpa's trying to teach them to shoot a rifle. So they use two fingers when they're 6 years old, and here they are 70, still doing the same thing, which is not necessarily a safety issue. It just drives your instructor a little bit crazy. But there's all kinds of bad habits I've seen.
The one-finger rule.
I've seen lots of bad habits that have to be untaught, and I've had female students who outshout the male students with almost no prior experience because they paid attention to my instruction and they followed my instruction and are shooting nice tight groups of 6 to 8 inches in diameter, where frequently a male student will be all over the silhouette, left, right, up, down. That's to summarize this part of our discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, go to your local gun range, seek out training from a NRA-certified firearms instructor. Take concealed carry training, not to learn how to use the firearm, which is part of it, but so you learn when you may and when you may not use deadly force. That's incredibly important. And try to go into your training with an open mind that you're going to learn how to defend innocent life, and you're going to learn how to do it properly, and walk away from bad concepts like firing warning shots or shooting the wound or things that are just going to get you in trouble, and learn the proper procedures from a certified instructor, Doug.
Exactly. Well said. Well said. So, yeah, you know, if you're listening, I'm not going to say your name, but if you're listening, I hope that whole everything there that was said clears that up. All right. You know, okay. What do we do? John, I don't know about you, but I in some ways, and I think a lot of people are feeling helpless right now. They're looking and seeing their country taken away from them. And we are kind of sitting by and saying, okay, well, what are we going to do? You know, and I know that you're not like that. I'm not like that, but I think a lot of people feel very frustrated at watching our country being taken away from us by these morons out there who want to, you know, these, if I hear white privilege, one more time, you know, believe me, I'm going to start. Or if I hear, just the usual phrases and the usual memes, the Black Lives Matter crap, the three people who started Black Lives Matter, for crying out loud, look at their backgrounds and understand that this is nothing but a communist, tentacle of communism. But all that said, you know, we need to me, John, I think a lot of people have reached their breaking point. A lot of people are saying, all right, you know, I got to do something. I'm not sure what. And I think people to a big extent are looking for leaders. What do you think? I mean, we've talked about this in the past. We ad nauseum, but here we are.
You're making reference mostly to the civil disorder we're seeing in the cities around the country.
I'm saying everything. I'm saying, you know, you got
the
okay. If one person, look, I'm not a mask guy. All right, don't tell me. First of all, don't tell me to put on a mask when I come into your store. Otherwise, I'm not gonna. I'm just not gonna patronize your store. And of course, John, I know. Look, it's private ownership, and you know it's an edict from the governor. But hey, I know I'm on the black market. I know stores I can go into without the mask. You know, black market. But and I'll tell you what, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to subject myself. So it's that. It's the barber can't reopen because, you know, we're not in the green phase yet. Well, that's a bunch of crap. So and by the way, I got to tell you this. Our state rep recently, last week, because we didn't move to the green phase, he said, I don't care what the governor says. Open your businesses. Open up. And that was the state rep here in my district.
Good for him. And I'm glad he
Yeah, and now more and more people are saying the same thing. Screw the governor. Wolf is an idiot, in my view. So, okay, so that combined with the civil disobedience, combined with the presidential election coming up, or combined with there's nobody, where in the hell are the perp walks for the people who attempted to take over, take down President Trump? Where are they? What about, the dog and pony shows in Congress? So all of us people are feeling like, man, you know, we can't catch a break. What do we do? So that's kind of, I'm going to just stop there. And I mean, pick one, pick them all. You know,
I would recommend people patronize businesses where wearing a mask is not mandated. Engage in activities they love to engage in and simply don't wear a mask. And, I have grandchildren coming in less than 2 weeks. And I was looking at Silver Dollar City in Branson as a possible destination. It turns out they have to wear a mask, so I'm not going. Simply not going. And we need to, these businesses that are voluntarily making people wear masks, they need to pay a price in terms of lost revenue. And make it clear to the management of the store that you're taking your business someplace else because of their mask wearing policy. Unless they have a license from the health department, they probably can't be mandated to make people wear a mask upon the threat of losing a license due to the health department. I don't believe that's the case for places that don't serve food or not involved in the healthcare industry. People need to vote with their feet, as the old expression goes. And do what's right for them. Do what's right for the community. Support the businesses that are open and not mandating masks. And go about your life. If you're found yourself unemployed, set up a new stream of employment. You can sell what I sometimes refer to. Most American homes have closets, basements, attics, garages full of what I call dust collectors. That could be sold on eBay as a source of income. The world's largest marketplace, by the way. It doesn't take hardly any capital. You need a postal scale. You need an eBay account. You need a PayPal account and a way to get this stuff on the Internet, obviously, computer access. And you can have another stream of income. One of the men I work with, he has a PhD in chemistry, but he's retired from that business, and now he sells antiques, both at an antique mall and online on eBay as a source of income in his retirement. So people need to vote with their feet, take personal responsibility, patronize businesses that are not participating in the government silliness about the Chinese flu, and be wary of Antifa, the reality of Antifa as opposed to the fantasy of Antifa, what it really presents to our various communities. And move forward with their lives and don't anguish over things they have no control over and take joy in the things they do have control over and move forward with those things.
I'm so glad you said that. This weekend I had to step away and, I spent some time talking to my wife and, my beautiful family. And I thank God I've got such a great family. And John, I know you got such a beautiful family. But, you know, where is the joy right now? Have you noticed that the left right now, the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, the media, everyone, they don't have any joy in their lives. They are miserable mucks.
24/7. Oh. 24/7, 365.
Yep.
No sense of humor.
No. And I got an email saying, hey, do you know this so-and-so is talking about you and John? And so I'm thinking, how miserable, how much of a despicable human being, how bad does your life have to be to stalk someone else? As an example. Seriously, and how intellectually barren must you be?
Bankrupt. Intellectually bankrupt.
Yes. Not to mention the spiritual and the moral bankruptcy that we're seeing. So we're seeing just this group of people who are the most miserable, wretched, vile, despicable sacks of you know what walking the planet, in my view. And if that suits you, if that fits you, well, hey, okay. But, I mean, have you noticed that, though? I guess back to my original question.
Well, I have. I've been politically active off and on for more than a half a century, Doug. And in that capacity, I've met and got to know any number of bona fide communists frequently. These men and women come from upper middle class families where they would go to, for example, an Ivy League college, and the parents pay for the tuition, no problem. They grow up in privileged homes, privileged environments, privileged schools. And at some point, something happens. There's a defect in their brain. They become embarrassed and humiliated that they had this privilege growing up. And I know one young woman, this is 40 years ago, a very attractive young woman who graduated from an Ivy League school. And she wanted to ingratiate herself in a white neighborhood that was the poorest of the poor in the city of St. Louis. Very high crime rate, very high drug rate, and a very low education rate and high unemployment. So she adopted the lifestyle of those folks, and she even changed her personal hygiene habits and no longer took a bath on a daily basis, no longer brushed her teeth after meals. And within a few years, she certainly looked like a person who had dropped out of school and didn't practice proper hygiene, but she had ingratiated herself in her mind with people who had grown up in that manner and had no choice. The communists I've known frequently come from a privileged background, and they're embarrassed and humiliated with the privilege that they grew up with, and they become anti-privilege and anti-education and anti-everything of people who are want to better themselves, get a great education, have a great career, have a great family, and have a great life. They become anti all of that. People who want to be productive and move ahead with their lives and have a great life. And ingratiate themselves with people who, even if they want to, can't because, well, if you have a 75 or 80 IQ, you're pretty limited what you can do in our society. Maybe in parts of other third world countries, you can have a very nice life herding goats, for example. But in our society, you have to have at least an average IQ and the desire to move ahead. In the absence of desire, nothing's going to happen. Nothing. And communists,
yeah,
that's who they are. When they want to destroy incentive. And that's what the tax, we need to talk about this a little bit. What the tax code has done to incentive.
Yes, yes.
Now, I'll use myself as an example. I graduated from high school in June of 1966. I immediately got a job within a few days doing construction work, commercial concrete work. My weekly paycheck was $110, and the government kept $5, I believe, in taxes. With $100, a $100 bill, I could go to a Chevrolet dealer, not Joe's used car lot, but a genuine Chevrolet dealership, and buy a used car for $100. That was okay. That's the term they use. My college tuition that first semester cost, I believe, about $300, another three paychecks. I could rent an apartment for less than $100 a month if I chose to. I was still living at home as an 18-year-old, so that wasn't an issue. In fact, men were raising families on a paycheck no bigger than what I was getting as a man fresh out of high school. Now, you take a young man now who's graduating in June of 2020. He's not going to take his first paycheck and buy an automobile. That's not going to happen. He's not going to pay tuition this coming fall with three paychecks. That's not going to happen. He's not going to rent an apartment for less than one paycheck a month. That's not going to happen either, Doug. And that's all a consequence of the tax system that we've imposed on ourselves.
Yep.
These youngsters, 18, 19, 20, they know they can't do what their parents did because they may not be understand it completely, but the tax code has destroyed incentive. Why should I work hard if I can't get what I want, no matter how hard I want work? That's destroying incentive. That's by design also, Doug. If you want, the greatest way to manipulate human society is with the tax code, to either increase incentive or destroy incentive. And that's, in fact, what the tax code has done, is destroy incentive for young people to work hard to achieve certain goals. It's a very sad thing we've done to ourselves.
Well, what can be done?
Well, change the tax code, obviously.
Well, right. But that's changing the tax code is I mean, that sounds great, but we need to – I mean, that's a process.
It's a process.
It's a big process. Right, right.
And if people say, well, we need the money to pay for things – no, the majority of money that's collected in federal income tax, almost all of it goes just to do something that's not constitutional anyway, which is pay interest on debt.
Right.
Not to pay for stuff, not to pay for highways and aircraft carriers and F-15s, is to pay for debt, which is unconstitutional to begin with.
Right.
So that's where the money goes to. And it's a process. And what I'm suggesting is something that obviously could not happen in a year or two, even 4 or 5 years, completely revamping the Internal Revenue Code. But we have successfully destroyed incentive for young people to work hard, get a job, have a life. We make fun of 30-year-olds living with their parents. Well, that's a consequence of the tax code, not because they want to live with their parents. It's because we've given them no choice. We take away most of the money they earn in a form of taxes.
Boy, you got that right. Who's this FICA dude? Anyway, joke. But yes, the incentives have been taken away. But that's part of a larger plan, and that plan, of course, is to make us the citizens of the United States and really all of the West subservient to subservient to this global governance and this, you know, I mean, think about it too. Isn't it interesting and telling that the Green New Deal, the carbon tax, think about any kind of revamping of things on a global scale, always involves taxing, always involves wealth confiscation. And so here we are. Again, I say it again, here we are. So now how do we fight against this? Well, that's and I say
well, becoming independent. I like to use the example of the Amish people. I've got to know a few Amish families, and there's a lot of Amish in Missouri. We've had hundreds of Amish families move to Missouri in one day. A lot of Amish people come from Pennsylvania, by the way. Some of the richest farmland on the planet being abandoned, and are coming to Missouri. Regardless, the Amish families have productive farms, nice homes. They have bank accounts. They're healthy, happy, productive people. They don't pay income taxes. And they live off what they produce. They don't accept welfare, and they're very healthy, happy, productive people living on their own without any interaction with government at all. Very minimal interaction, anyway. So we can use the example of what can be done. Most people aren't going to choose to live the lifestyle of Amish farmers. On one hand, on the other, it doesn't preclude it from being done if a person chose to and knew how to do it properly. Mm. The Amish don't get vaccines, which means the only children in the Amish community, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of people, by the way, nobody in the Amish community has autism except the children who get vaccinations.
Right.
That's something.
I've seen that. Now, those are numbers that I've seen, statistics I've seen. And it's hard to get. I mean, unless you know where to look, but you're right. Yet parent after parent after parent will take their child and, subject them to unnecessary vaccinations before they're able to walk, talk, or, you know, crawl.
Right. Well, they don't need them at all. There's two documentaries out, Vaxxed, that's V-A-X-X-E-D, and Vaxxed 2. They both give a lot of scientific evidence as to the harm that vaccines can and will cause. And people need to watch these documentaries, read up on it, make their own independent decisions, obviously. But I'll no longer, last vaccination I had was more than 25 years ago. But I'll never have another vaccine for any reason, any time. It's simply not going to happen. You know, there's a vaccine that will be prepared and ready possibly soon in September for the Chinese flu, the coronavirus, COVID-19. That can't happen. That vaccine's already been prepared.
Well, okay. What are you going to do about it? Hey, John, what are you going to do about it? Because, see, here's the thing. I'm with the government. I'm going to come to your house. And I'm gonna make you take the vaccine. But you know what? Maybe I won't even come to your house. I'll tell you this, John. If you don't take the vaccine, you're not going to have a bank account. You're not going to be able to be a vendor for any wares, perhaps. You're not going to be able to ride public transportation. You're not going to be able to fly. You're not going to be able to cross maybe even state lines, but most assuredly not out of the country. Then what?
That would be new authority. The authority they have now would be to limit flying on commercial aircraft and entering federal building or federal real estate. That's as much authority as they have at the moment.
Okay.
I don't believe President Trump, President Trump was initially had Robert Kennedy Jr. was going to be part of his administration. I believe that's representative of President Trump's true feelings in his heart, the message being brought publicly by Robert Kennedy Jr. President Trump has also said in the last 2 or 3 weeks, no mandatory vaccines. So as long as President Trump is president, that's not going to happen. Another president and a Democratic-controlled Senate, obviously those things could happen. Right now, it's a non-issue as long as President Trump is president and the United States Senate is controlled by Republicans. But if those things change, your concern certainly could become reality there, Doug.
Is that the line in the sand? I mean, I'm looking for, you know what, like most Americans, we're looking for some line in the sand where Christian conservatives are willing to draw and say, you know what, we've been nice, we've been kind, we've been, you know, you've mistaken our lack of action. You've mistaken our kindness. For weakness.
Right.
So here's
a big mistake.
Right. I'm looking for that line in the sand.
Well, forced vaccinations would obviously be a line in the sand.
A line.
To me, it's obvious.
But is it the line?
A line. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything that would be anti-gun on a national level, that would be another line in the sand.
Agreed.
Given 50 states or individual states that have their own laws. People can leave states like Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, California, which are very anti-gun, and go to free states like Missouri, where you can own all the machine guns you want. In fact, I know a guy who owns a fully functional tank. Fully functional. I emphasize fully functional tank.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
In the state of Missouri.
Right.
So we have a lot of freedom here. Doug, you could build a 5,000-square-foot house with many bedrooms and bathrooms in my neighborhood with no building permit, no inspections, none whatsoever.
Well, John, look, as much as I'd love to get out of this tundra climate that I'm in, this Arctic, and move to Missouri, okay, wait a second. I didn't vote for these rum-dums in the office. I didn't vote for these twits. And this is my home as much as it is theirs, and they're telling me I've got to have a vaccination, or I can't own firearms, or whatever the case might be. BS. No, I ain't moving. You're moving, or you're going to get the hell out of here. You're not going to tell me what to do. I guess, John? I guess I'm looking for people to stand up and say, in mass, by the way, and say, you're telling me that I can't open my business? Hey. Kiss this, because I'm opening my business and deal with it. And I get the fact, well, we're going to cite you and fine you. But if everyone did that, if the majority of people did that, man, they wouldn't. This government would back down, I believe, in a heartbeat and say, okay. That's just me. I don't know. But why should I move? As much as I like your state and your area. I haven't been there. But seriously, I ask that because I'm sure people, you know, I'm sure people are thinking about it right now.
Well, they are. And I've had any number of listeners make inquiries about my neighborhood and about the state of Missouri both. And people are, in fact, moving here from around the country. It's a personal decision. What you say is absolutely true. If enough people stand up and say, no, enough, then they would back down. That would take organization and dedication and a lot of work to make those things happen, Doug. And if you want to take on that task, then God bless you for doing so. If, however, you just want to live a life and not have to fight these elected officials, Missouri is a free state, and the borders are open.
Yeah, well taken, well taken. And, you know, the other part of things, too, when I was talking with a group of supporters last night, you know, I think we know it inherently, know it, that what we're fighting is a battle between a principality. I mean, it's a spiritual battle we're fighting.
It is.
And I think people have a tendency to forget that or ignore that at their own peril or even mock it, as I've recently heard. And I'm thinking, you know, in addition to being miserable,
Well, the agnostics and the atheists will, of course, mock that because they don't understand. They don't have a foundation based on the teachings of Jesus Christ. So, of course, they're going to mock it and make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
But those of us who do have that spiritual foundation to work from in the teachings of Jesus Christ, we know what the reality is. And I'm sorry for the agnostics and the atheists, but they're the ones that are lost, not us, Doug.
That's true. Yeah, very, very, very true. All right. I can't believe whenever we get together, conversation just flies rapidly. You know, we've got about 15 minutes of our program left, and really, that's not a lot of time. So,
Let's talk about some stuff that'll help people.
Yes.
First of all, almost everybody, myself included, needs to be in better physical condition. Just get a good pair of walking shoes and walk. You don't need to be a member of some kind of a fitness club or anything. Get a sweatsuit. Get out early in the morning before the heat gets up, you know, where it's not tolerable. Get out there at 7 a.m. after the sun's up and just walk whatever you can walk, depending on where your starting point is. It may be a couple hundred yards. It may be half a mile, maybe a mile. And if you need to talk to a healthcare professional first, then do that. But just get out and walk. That's a good, healthy exercise. All you need is a good pair of shoes, a safe place to walk where you're not going to get hit by cars or have anybody want to harm you. And just get out and walk and walk and walk and walk and do it at least three times a week. Stay properly hydrated. If you know, in these summer months it's hot, you need to make sure you stay properly hydrated and I put 1/4 teaspoon, that's a very small amount, 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt per quart of water to keep those electrolytes in balance. Don't consume Gatorade. That stuff should be illegal, quite frankly. But just good, clean water, and if you've got an electrolyte situation, which we all do, 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt per quart does not make the water taste salty. It just kind of gives it a smooth flavor. And get out and walk and get some good exercise. Swing those arms. Have a good, healthy stride. If you want to increase the value of the walk, put on a backpack, and then maybe you put a couple of books in it. And then maybe a week later, another couple of books. And a week after that, maybe a couple more books. I wouldn't want to use water because it'll slosh around. But increase the weight, and that'll increase the value of that walk. But do it incrementally. Don't go out there doing what a 19-year-old Marine would be doing in his training. No, you do what's appropriate for your age and your physical condition. It has to be age appropriate and condition appropriate, those walks. And most of us can do that without any expense other than having a good pair of walking shoes, which everybody should have anyway. I like to wear cowboy boots, but I don't go for walks in cowboy boots. That would be crazy. They're not meant for walking any distance, but they're very comfortable. Now, I wear good quality walking shoes when I go on my walks. I swing my arms. I enjoy being in the outdoors, and I stay properly hydrated. And I like to walk uphill. Walking uphill and walking downhill are both very valuable in terms of increasing the value of that walk. So I want to encourage everybody to get out and walk and stay properly hydrated, Doug.
Very good. And you know what? I have to echo the importance of shoes, especially now. If you think things are going to get bad, you know, Marines, military officers, a lot of importance on your feet, obviously. Get a good pair of shoes. You're right. John's right. And these things might be, you might be saying, what am I listening to? This is so like stupid. But you know, some of these things, and I'm serious.
It's basic stuff. Here's something I recommend several times a year. Maybe sound counterintuitive, but I recommend merino wool socks. It doesn't matter if it's 10 degrees or 110. I wear merino wool socks all year long. Before I did that, beginning 18, 20 years ago, I'd wear cotton socks in the summer. And all summer long, my feet were cold and clammy with cotton socks. I guarantee it for most people most of the time. With merino wool socks, my feet stay dry and comfortable. If it's 110 degrees, I've got merino wool socks on. Merino wool has longer fibers than other wools. Therefore, almost nobody finds it to be scratchy. They last forever. It's remarkable how long these socks live. It's such a basic thing, and I've had so many listeners, Doug, write me emails thanking me for letting them know that merino wool socks even exist, and the fact that they tried them out, they love them, and whether it's 10 degrees or 110 degrees, they, like myself, wear merino wool socks to have comfortable, dry feet. If you got cold, clammy feet in the summertime with cotton socks, you're going to be miserable.
Exactly. And just for the listeners and viewers, say it slowly. Merino, like merino?
Merino. Merino. Merino.
Okay. Merino wool socks.
Correct.
All right. And I, believe me, I take great pride in my socks and the wool type, as in suits, frankly. Good stuff.
All my suits are wool suits. And, right. Wool is a marvelous fabric, that has not been overshadowed by the man-made fabrics, not even close.
Very true. And so, okay. Very important things there, for people to really, you know, that'll help people. So, all right. Now let's look ahead to the week ahead, if you don't mind, because I know you're looking around the corners, and what do you see this week? I asked you this, I think, last week, and I'm going to ask you again this week. What should we be looking at, paying attention to, and kind of focusing on as we scour the headlines and the whatever news feeds that come upon our social network?
Well, we have to be paying careful attention to the activities of Antifa and their associates. That's not optional. We're into a very dangerous time for our republic, locally and nationally. So people need to be paying attention to the activities of these anarchists. They're dangerous, violent people that have been trained, equipped, and paid for by George Soros and his associates. What's happening is planned in advance. There's nothing spontaneous at all about these riots. Nothing spontaneous. These are paid professionals who've been trained and equipped to do what they're doing. They're trained to fabricate incendiary devices. They're trained on how to confront police officers and cause harm to police officers and injure police officers and destroy property. It's been pretty well widespread around the alternative media that pallets of bricks have been dropped off in close proximity to the rioters. That takes a level of organization and logistics that spontaneous rioters simply don't have, obviously.
Yes, and so, you can bet your bottom that it's obviously true these pallets of bricks were dropped off and other weapons of opportunity or to be made to look like weapons of opportunity. Having said that, I can bet you, I know for a fact, law enforcement knows exactly where these bricks came from. There is the ability for them to trace it back, trace the money, follow the money. But you know what I'm not seeing? I'm not seeing a willingness, to do so. I'm not seeing it happen. in
well, I believe Attorney General Barr and the FBI will, and locally in St. Louis, Missouri, my hometown, local prosecutor refused to file charges against Antifa anarchists who've been arrested, with police being eyewitnesses to their illegal activity. She refused to file charges against these individuals. And of course, St. Louis, Missouri was captured by the communists at the city government level decades ago. So it doesn't surprise me. It disappoints me, but it doesn't surprise me. So I believe Bill Barr, I still have hope that Bill Barr will order the Department of Justice to initiate investigations and issue indictments against the individuals responsible for this violence and property damage and loss of life. Doug, I really hope that he does.
I hope so. And we know from the findings of Project Veritas, we know from the findings of very recent findings now of Millie Weaver, Millennial Millie, who did an undercover sting or undercover operation, really at the James O'Keefe on steroids in the Antifa realm. Terabytes of information, mirroring servers, getting just an incredible infiltration into the enemy camp. What we're seeing right now is this organized destabilization of the United States. So, you know, what you said too, I want people to pay attention to markings, tagging. Just real quick, I've got some information here. I've not been able to verify it. I have not seen it in my area. But look on telephone poles, for example, for blue tape, black tape, or other markings of a similar nature. And if you see that, pay attention. I don't know. I've not been read in on what this means. But I do know it's being put up by members of the organized Antifa left, BLM, the umbrella people. So in other words, in suburban neighborhoods, they're putting up they're tagging suburban neighborhoods, and I don't know what it means, again, but and we're in the process of looking at that. Just thought I'd share that with you. I don't, have you heard anything about that?
Well, I have not, but that would be a tactic that would not surprise me, that they would tag the homes of police officers, for example, or members of the judges, anybody that they would regard as a possible enemy, maybe owners of certain businesses. That would not surprise me at all if that was taking place, Doug. Not at all.
Yeah. Okay. It's just something for people to look out for. And again, I'm not talking about the dots on the mailbox. No. I'm talking about new tape, colored tape. Think like paper, things that you'd use to paint off if you're painting a wall, a mask off a wall or something at a corner of a wall. That kind of stuff, or even the heavier tape, but look for those, and pay attention to your surroundings, as John said. And in the meantime, also prep yourself. Again, things that you can do: the shoes, the socks, the things that you may not think about. And if you're a woman too, who's struggling with which weapon to buy. By the way, go to a gun store, and in addition to getting help, they'll let you try out, hold various weapons. Make sure you can handle that and understand everything about it. That's very good advice. And I would go to John. I would go to you. You've got classes, right? I mean, or do you have classes? I asked you this last week.
Well, I teach concealed carry instruction, but since Missouri changed their law, Missouri is now a constitutional carry state. You no longer need a permit to carry a pistol. So, people stop signing up for the classes. Although I'm still authorized to conduct them, people stop signing up for them. So it's kind of a non-issue for the time being.
All right.
I guess that's changing.
So really, you're not taking anybody in or people in for classes?
I can do private instruction. It would be quite expensive, but okay. I can do private expensive.
All right.
Private classes.
That's fair enough. All right. Yeah, it's what the market bears, I suppose, or what the market demands in that respect. So here we are, my goodness. Here we are looking at Monday, June 9th. The year is almost half over. I mean, think about that. 2020. And what a year it's been. Looking ahead, as you said, just be very cautious about Antifa and such. Do you think we're going to see infrastructure hit? I was sending an email last night to ask you that. Do you think that we're looking at a potential hit on infrastructure?
Our enemies certainly understand how to bring down a sitting, and that would be to take out the power grid, telecommunications, water. Of course I know that. That's you know, any high school student could figure that out. Will they do it? That's the big question.
When? Yeah.
And obviously they've chosen not to do it yet. I don't believe it's in their playbook at the moment, or otherwise they would have done it. It's easy to do. It's simple to do. You don't need weapons or explosives. All you need is common hardware store tools to knock out the power grid, telecommunications, and water supply. I think people need to be aware that that's a possibility and be prepared to deal with it if it happens. They have not done this in the past. Will they do it in the future? Possibly. If it helps them achieve their goal to bring down this president, then it becomes a much greater possibility. If they can't win by the current tactics they're using of attacking businesses and so forth, shutting down highways, then they may step it up and go ahead and attack infrastructure. We can't disregard that as being a possibility, Doug. We simply can't do that.
And targeting President Trump is high on their list as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
as an individual.
No, right.
Nobody. Mike Pence is a great guy. He can't do what President. He simply doesn't have the personality. He can't do what President Trump does. He simply can't.
I couldn't either, man. I'd be looking for the nuke. You know, give me the nuclear suitcase. Something's going to go. I don't know where, but yeah, I just, you know, I, God bless that man for not nuking something or nuking the DNC.
I don't know any individual who could do what President Trump has done. I simply don't. I don't know who that person would be.
Man, you got that right. Well, my brother, we've done it. We've taken you through another program. I want to say thank you. Yeah, and by the way, your programs have been spectacular lately. And I want people to tune into the John Moore Show right there on RBN. Go to thelibertyman.com. There it is on your screen, the web presence for John, Mr. John Moore. Portions of the website below. Announcements begin at top left below and will be delineated as such. But no, I want you to take a look at that box there. Click on that for the most recent broadcast. You can drill down for archived shows, but you're doing a great job, man. You are just kicking
Thank
butt.
Thank you, Doug.
I love
Thank
it.
Thank you, Doug.
All right.
We'll do this again next Monday. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, my brother. Thank you. Folks, that'll do it for me tonight. Man, I'll tell you what. John Moore, he's the guy, isn't he? He's the man. The man, the myth, the legend. Where did that come from? Eric the Tech, where did that come from?
Before my time.
Everything's before your time. 35 and you think you're going on 20. You should see Eric the Tech, by the way. He's seriously looking good. I want to thank him for all he does. HagmanStore.com. Did you know he designed the coffee bags? And I mean, he did it all. He designed them all. I mean, he went and I even gave him a few days off. He went and picked the coffee beans. He's out there putting them in the roaster. Came back. Now he's doing all the technical stuff. Now go to HagmanStore.com. HagmanStore.com. I'm serious about the package design. HagmanStore.com. For coffee, HagmanStore.com for coffee, HagmanStore.com. Have you got it yet? If not, why not? Huh? Get it. HagmanStore.com. And again, thank you all for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow with Stan Dale. God bless.